On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke probing what the legislature will do to battle Wisconsin's deteriorating health crisis. Governor Evers says he expects to introduce a package of relief legislation this week. The legislature hasn't met in over 6 months. Here's Evers at his administration's pandemic presser Thursday.
I'm looking forward to having a discussion with the leaders of the Assembly and the Senate around what we can do, but they continue to be, at least last time I heard publicly, they're not in favor of mandating anything.
What do you need from your lawmakers? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Jim Steinke is Republican, representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District, the Kaukauna area. Representative Steinke, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So Republicans control the Assembly and Senate. Will Republicans meet, call a session on the governor's forthcoming COVID relief package?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we're definitely open to. I know the speaker has reached out to the governor to have some discussions about the legislation that may be coming from the governor. He hasn't clued us in yet as to what that legislation entails, but something we're definitely open to talking to him about.
I mean, we've blown past 300,000 cases. Our chief medical officer, who we'll talk with next, warned that our state soon might not be able to adequately treat patients. Is it time to do something? And if so, what?
Well, and that's the challenge, right? I mean, we've seen that the governor's mask mandate hasn't been effective in bringing the cases down. I think that's the challenge anytime that you're that the state is coming in and making statewide rules without having any conversations with local units of government or law enforcement. We've seen that the enforcement of this has been spotty at best, but I don't know about anybody else, but the vast majority of places I go, people are wearing masks already. So I think that's a positive. And I think what the governor did in his address last week, I think, was important, letting people know that they should wear masks, they should social distance, they should be washing their hands frequently, and they should be staying home when they're sick. Those are all things that we've been parroting for months now.
Well, the governor had his stay-at-home order struck down, sued on his emergency order, sued on his statewide mask mandate. What are his options as governor besides begging Wisconsinites to just stay home, which he did in a televised address, as you said last week?
Well, and that's, like I said, that's something I agree with what the governor said. I think that we need people to take this virus seriously. We need them to comply in a voluntary way. Again, we just don't believe that these statewide orders work, especially when there is not consultation with local units of government and local law enforcement to ensure that they are enforced.
So if the governor can't enforce anything, can't enforce gatherings, masks, emergency orders without a challenge, without a court fight, if it's off the table in the name of personal liberty or technicalities, how do you expect local public health workers and the government to get COVID under control to protect Wisconsinites?
Well, let's be clear. Local units of government have more capabilities to enforce orders like this than the state does. We've seen that in Milwaukee. We've seen that in Madison. And that's something that, again, we've said all along that we support local units of government's ability to put in place some of these orders if they see fit, because they're the ones closest to the communities and closest to local law enforcement who would be tasked with enforcing this to begin with.
We're talking with Representative Jim Steinke, Assembly Majority Leader, about the state's COVID upsurge and the deteriorating health crisis, taking your questions as well. How do you want to see lawmakers handling the pandemic in the state? Would you like to see a more hands-off approach, a more local approach? Join in at 800-642-1234. Representative, if you're saying that we need more of a local approach, what local mandates have worked around the state? What would you hold up as an example?
Well, again, I mean, I think if you look at some of the mandates that have been put in place, especially locally in Dane County, Milwaukee County, I think there was some, it was shown to be somewhat effective, although now we're starting to see cases explode throughout the case, even where there are local mandates. So again, I think it's going to come down to people taking responsibility for the, for themselves, making sure that if they're vulnerable, that they're isolating themselves, and hopefully everybody else will start to take this more seriously. I mean, that's really what we have to bank on.
You know, our legislature has been the least active full-time state legislative body in the country since states began taking up legislation to combat the pandemic. What do you think of that?
Well, First of all, you know, if they're talking about when bills are passed, that's one thing. We passed dozens of policy items earlier this year that gave Governor Evers all the money that he needed and all the authority that he needed to respond to this pandemic. Again, over $2.2 billion that the governor had to spend without having to come to the legislature for approval. We gave him $75 million in state dollars to spend, which he utilized not a single penny of. We also gave him the ability to transfer employees from agency to agency. There were dozens of things that we did that gave him the authority that he needed. And it's important to note, he didn't ask us over the course of the last few months to come in and pass a single policy item. He didn't ask us for a single dollar more than he had to spend already. A few weeks ago when he was asked what else the Republican or what he would want the Republicans to pass, he didn't have a good answer for that.
What are you looking for out of this package?
Well, it's something we'll be interested to see because he hasn't tipped his hand on.
Well, I mean, what do you personally want to see out of this package? What needs to pass here in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, there are a lot of things that like schools have asked us to come in and do. There are things that we can do to provide relief to businesses that are impacted by this. There's a whole host of things that we're going to be looking at, whether the governor does introduce this package of legislation or not. We're going to be working with our caucus over the coming weeks to determine what we can do as a legislature to respond to this.
When you mention schools and businesses, what specifically can schools do, or what aid do they need? What can the legislature do for schools at this point?
Well, I know they have a whole list of things that school districts were looking for, and I apologize, I don't have that list in front of me, but I know that they were looking for some changes that would help them to respond. I don't think it boiled down to money at this point. It was more about policy changes, so those are things that we can look at.
Should teachers be essential workers?
Well, I think everybody, I think that's the problem that we get into is when we start to defining who is essential and who's not. I think everybody is essential. My wife happens to be a public school teacher. Of course, I think she's essential. There is nothing that is more important than educating our kids. And right now what we're seeing across the state is kids are suffering. We've seen in Appleton right here just came out recently that the school district themselves admit that the way that kids are being educated right now, 100% virtually, is putting a lot of kids far behind, and that's something that we need to address.
Talking with Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke on this half of the state capitol report, the governor's statewide mask mandate expires in 5 days. Should it be extended? Should it be challenged in court? How do you feel about the governor's executive order advising you to stay home? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Representative Steinecke here on the Ideas Network. It's a state capitol report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's clerks must finalize vote counts, wrap up what's known as the canvas process by tomorrow. On December 14th, 4 weeks from today, each state's designated electors will meet to cast their official ballots in the Electoral College. Meanwhile, Assembly Speaker Voss directed a committee with subpoena power to investigate how the election was administered. Do you support a probe of our state's elections process? What do you make of a federal suit brought on behalf of President Trump to try to change the outcome in Wisconsin? It's 800-642-1234. Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's take a call now. Mary is with us from Pewaukee this morning. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My information is, you know, since March, we all pretty well knew most of the ropes as far as common sense and wearing a mask and washing the hands and the social distancing. So I totally believe am along with the same line of thinking as Evers. Also very happy that Biden won. They are going to be, as they already are, starting to, handle this in a smart, common sense, science, and listen to the doctors kind of a way. And the people that wake up each day and don't think they need to wear a mask, freedom does not mean hurting someone else.
Mary, what's your question? Go ahead.
It's just my comment that I agree with what your guest is saying, and that Evers should definitely be able to issue mandates.
Mary, thanks. And so Mary is saying she appreciates the statewide mask mandate, and leaving it up to municipalities could be difficult. What do you say to that?
How many tickets have been written for people violating the mask mandate?
I have no idea.
I think that's the issue, right? Is that when the governor issued this mask mandate, he did it without having consulted with any local units of government, without law enforcement. Law enforcement across the state were taken aback by the announcement of the mask mandate because they hadn't been consulted. And most of what we heard when the mask mandate came down from law enforcement is that they weren't going to spend their time enforcing it. So what good are state mandates if you don't have the backing of law enforcement or local units of government to enforce it? And that's what we've seen with how Governor Evers has handled this. That's why we have to be able to handle it on a much more local level, where local units of government are working with their law enforcement to make sure that if you're going to put an order in place, that it's actually enforced. Because if you're just going to throw out a mandate out there that's not going to be enforced, well, then what's the difference from what the governor said a week ago when he passed or when he announced the executive order just advising people to do what they should do?
So
the same thing.
What citations would you suggest for not wearing a mask?
Well, the governor already has that in place, right? I mean, he's got up to a $200 fine, I believe it is, for not wearing a mask. But he's never worked with local law enforcement to see if they would enforce it. And that's why we haven't seen, as far as I've heard, I haven't seen or heard of a single incident where somebody without a mask was cited for not wearing a mask. So is it a mandate or is it an advisory? And what I would say at this point is it amounts to an advisory, just the same as his executive order from a week ago.
We're talking with Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke of Kaukauna, and we're now going to switch gears here, look at Election Day and challenges in Wisconsin to the legitimacy of the election and the ensuing results. Taking your questions as well about the election and the challenges you see, 800-642-1234. Representative, Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolfe said repeatedly there were no problems with the election reported to her commission, no complaints filed alleging any irregularities. Your colleague Speaker Voss has ordered an investigation into the election results. Why are you doing this?
So there's a difference between believing something has fundamentally affected the outcome of the election and taking a look at it just to ensure that everything was followed correctly. I mean, what we've seen, I'm one that believes that no matter what happens, it is unlikely to uncover any kind of nefarious activities that would overturn the results of the election in Wisconsin. I really do believe that. I don't believe that there was widespread fraud large enough in numbers to overturn the results. I mean, we've seen recounts in the state before. We've seen things like this happen before where we do recounts and you're looking at a couple of hundred votes change hands, but not 20,000. So I think it's unlikely to overturn the results of the election. But I also support the idea that, you know, we have the Elections Committee take a look at things, because there was an explosion of people using the designation of indefinitely confined to receive an absentee ballot. There were things that I know are all over social media, which, of course, we know most of that stuff is nonsense, but people are concerned about. So I support the idea of taking a look at it. I just don't think it's going to result in much.
What will the investigation entail?
The Elections Committee will have the ability to call people in to testify and just get answers to questions that are out there.
Who will be subpoenaed?
That would be up to the Elections Committee. From what I have heard, most of the elections officials that may be called to testify would do so willingly. So I'm not sure that the subpoena power will be necessary, but it's there in case it is.
Are you in favor of a recount in Wisconsin?
That's up to the candidate. The president has the ability, because the state law that's within 1%, to call for a recount. Of course, the campaign would have to pay for that. So if he wishes to do that, that would be up to him.
That federal suit brought Thursday that seeks to throw out all the votes cast in Dane, Milwaukee, and Menominee counties. The suit offers no evidence or even sworn witness statements to back up its assertion that Wisconsin had illegal votes. Does this suit brought on behalf of President Trump have any merit to you?
No.
So what would you, then why is Wisconsin looking at its own investigation, its own, you know, irregularities, if you will?
Well, it's a lot. There's a pretty big difference between asking for three counties' votes to be thrown out in total and an elections committee who has oversight over elections to answer questions that may be out there. Two vastly different things.
Under state law, the legislature has no role in picking electors who are bound to cast their vote for the winner of the popular vote in Wisconsin. Representative Joe Sanfilippo said if your investigation turns up something, you could, quote, require Electoral College delegates to correct the injustice with their votes. Is that possible?
I don't believe we can.
Would you like to say anything further on that?
No, I don't believe we can. I believe the winner of the popular vote in the state gets the electors. That's how the law works, and I believe that's what's going to happen.
Do you think that what is happening now with this litigation here in Wisconsin and elsewhere, is undermining our democracy?
Well, it's challenging, right? I mean, I think one of the things that we're seeing, not only here in the state, but throughout the country, is the impact of social media and stories that get out that have very little basis in fact. You know, one of the things that I've been pushing back against is this idea that, 130,000 votes just appeared in Milwaukee County. We knew about those votes, and that's why I've been trying to tell people ever since the election, is those votes were always there. Those were absentee ballots that, as far as we know, were legally cast. We knew how many were out there. We knew how many were going to go for Biden and how many were going for President Trump. So the challenge for all of us right now is that there is so much misinformation on social media, a lot of national phone calls and emails and things coming in from across the country regarding the results of our election. It's hard for people throughout the state to sift and winnow through what is true and what is not true, and that's one of the challenges that we're having.
You chair Assembly Speaker Voss's Task Force on Racial Disparities, and Republicans had agreed to establish it after not taking action during a special session on police accountability. What work has the task force done so far?
So we've had a couple of meetings so far. One was an initial kind of a structural meeting to set forward what we're going to be doing. Just had a meeting last week where we brought in families of that have been impacted by racial disparities in law enforcement to tell their stories. It was an incredibly powerful day, really difficult stories to listen to. I know the subcommittee on for the Task Force on Education and Economic Development also had a meeting last week where they brought in DPI and school choice groups to talk about the achievement gap. And we're going to be having another meeting in a couple of weeks to start digging into legislation that might be out there.
Representative Steinicke, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Representative Jim Steinicke of Kaukauna is Assembly Majority Leader. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Wisconsin's Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases, Dr. Ryan Westergaard, briefs us on the dire COVID situation in our state, what happens next to help contain the unchecked spread. Your questions on COVID and the state response, 800-642-1234. It's Dr. Westergaard on the State Cap after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Public health officials, physicians on our program week after week explain we must do more to contain the spread. Basic steps, wash hands a lot, wear a mask, social distance, get tested. Governor Evers' plea in a statewide address last week, stay home, at his pandemic response presser Thursday.
We have a long road ahead of us, and staying home to save lives is one of the best ways you can help the farmers, the workers, the families, healthcare systems, and small businesses that need our help now more than ever.
Frontline hospital workers, what do you need? What are you experiencing? What questions do you have about the virus spread and what happens next in the state response? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Ryan Westergaard is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Dr. Westergaard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
So as we just blow past 300,000 cases and hospitals are at their max, what are you seeing around the state? What are you paying attention to?
Well, we're most acutely paying attention to hospital capacity, particularly with respect to staffing of hospitals and rehabilitation, meaning post-hospital care. That's really going to be the key resource in the weeks ahead as cases continue to increase.
What are you looking for out of the field hospital? Not many patients there.
Yeah, that's true. The field hospital was developed as an overflow for people who have a need for medical care for COVID-19, but don't need an ICU, don't need intensive care. That's only part of the problem right now. But one of the challenges that we're seeing statewide is a lack of step-down units, or what we call post-acute care. So people that don't necessarily require the level of care that's in a hospital, but might not be well enough to go home. This can be patients who have COVID-19 or any other condition, and can be a limited resource to find beds where they can get the rehabilitation services that they need in assistance with their activities of daily living. So there's multiple parts of the healthcare system that are strained right now. The alternative care facility helps with some of it, but not all, unfortunately.
You've been concerned about hospitals having to go on divert. Are you hearing of hospitals diverting patients elsewhere?
Yes. Well, to some degree, that always happens. There's the possibility that patients can be transferred at the level, for example, of the emergency department to another hospital if there's more appropriate care elsewhere. But in this environment, when a growing number of hospitals say they have no ICU beds at all, that becomes more widespread. A patient who needs a ventilator or who needs critical care services might not be able to be admitted at the hospital where they normally seek care, and they need to get transferred elsewhere. So that always happens to some degree, but that's one of the parameters, one of the variables that we're watching closely, because the concern is it's going to happen more and more.
Are you looking at numbers for what's happening within the ICUs, how long patients are staying, what those outcomes look like when the patient goes into ICU?
Not directly at the state level. What we do is we ask hospitals to report the daily ICU census and the number of patients who are on a ventilator. So we have some awareness of how many patients are in the ICU right now. And right now it's about 460 was the last tally. But as anyone who's worked in a hospital knows, people who need ICU, it can change day to day, hour to hour. So that's a pretty dynamic situation.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer, State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases, and he's giving us an update on the COVID crisis here in Wisconsin. Do you have COVID? What has your experience been like? Were you contacted by a contact tracer? How did that go? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kathy is joining us from Janesville with a question. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, actually, it's more of a comment, and I was on hold while your last guest was on, and thank you for taking my call. I teach in a district that's about 30 miles west of Milwaukee, and we, from the beginning of the school year, have been face-to-face, but we did give parents a choice if they wanted to be virtual, and it's a small number of people that did choose to be virtual. But about 40% of my caseload, I'm a special ed teacher, is virtual right now. We've had majority of our staff in and out. We've had all three of our kindergarten teachers are out right now due to an exposure and a positive case. And our 4K has been out twice. So when I hear people call in saying that they want to have kids face-to-face, teachers want that too. We absolutely want that. We know kids need that. Teachers need that. But this flip-flopping back and forth and not having consistency is absolutely horrendous for everyone. And to hear our legislators saying that, Governor Evers is taking all these different steps that are not enforceable, it's so frustrating for us trying to do what's best for kids and best practice to not have any consistency or support from our state legislators.
Well, Kathy, and I'm going to pause right there and allow Dr. Westergaard to respond. There are 676 educational facility-wide investigations. What, as you look at the situation with schools, virtual or face-to-face, what are you seeing and what can you say about it?
Well, I appreciate the comment, Kathy, and I hear the frustration that you're expressing, and I know many, many people are feeling that way. When schools have come back into session, I would say the overall sense is things have not been as bad as we feared, and it's not to say that we don't have outbreaks in schools. We have many, many outbreaks in schools, but I think we've learned that schools haven't been the single biggest factor accelerating transmission in the community. And that was something we were really concerned about. So in some ways, we've done better than we feared we might. And I think it's what we've learned from that is there are ways to do many essential things safely. It requires some flexibility, as Kathy was mentioning, and that can take a toll. But having the ability to identify people who are exposed, quarantine them at home for a period of time, testing as much as we can, and doing the things in the school like distancing and mask wearing, I think has really prevented a lot of cases. So overall, there's very few good things about this pandemic. But I would say a lot of us in public health are relatively encouraged and pleased with relatively how few severe or large outbreaks we've had in schools. So I think we're learning a lot from that experience.
You have been concerned about students returning home for Thanksgiving break, for the holidays. What do you see there?
I think it's tremendously risky to have multi-generational gatherings coming up for Thanksgiving. And I think if that was one message that we in public health would want to communicate to the state in the coming weeks, that's really one of the most dangerous things we can think about. What's going on in transmission across the state right now is what people have described as silent spread. Many of the cases that are getting transmitted are people who don't know that they're infected. We've known that this has happened. This happens with this virus, but now in the era where there are so many cases, and contact tracing is under strain. A lot of people carry the virus and spread it without knowing it. So someone can be exposed to the virus, be infectious, feel fine, and then expose other people who are vulnerable without knowing it. And that's the thing we really need to do everything we can avoid. So young people who are leaving, coming back from school are in that relatively low-risk category, and they need to be extra careful to stay out of close contact with people who are older or have vulnerabilities.
How often should they be testing before they head home?
I think getting a test before going home can be very useful and tell people if they need to isolate. But I think it's also really important to know what it doesn't tell us. So if someone's been in an environment where there's a lot of transmission going on, a negative test tells you there's no virus present right now. But if you were exposed to someone anytime in the past 2 weeks, you could become infectious later on. So a negative test doesn't say it's safe to gather, unfortunately. But what it can tell us, though, is that by testing a lot of people, it can tell us whether we've been exposed to someone else who tested positive. So testing widespread serves a useful purpose, but it's really important we guard against that misconception that a negative test means it's safe to gather, because it might not.
Let's bring in Ryan now in Eau Claire. Hi, Ryan. What is your situation like?
Hi, I'm a service technician. I go into people's homes to work on electronics. We are considered essential. That's enough that I'll say so that my boss doesn't know who I am. And I am absolutely shocked and appalled by the number of people who are under county quarantine who either keep an existing appointment or make a new appointment when their services stop working because... And some of them not even bothering to tell the technician that, hey, by the way, I'm under quarantine until after the appointment is over, or even at all.
Do you have enough PPE?
That should answer it.
Doctor,
were given 3 cloth masks in June, July.
Dr. Westergaard, what is the situation like with Ryan explaining that going into people's homes who are under quarantine?
Yeah, I think it's similar to the point I was trying to make with my last response. I think there's a significant failure to understand just how important that principle of quarantine is and what that means. Essentially, it means you are a danger to others. There's a period of time where you've been exposed that you could start shedding virus and putting other people at risk in your environment. So understanding that during that quarantine period, it's really not safe to be in close contact with anyone is an important thing to know. I think it's very understandable. It's hard to fathom at this phase in the epidemic how many people should be quarantined. This is usually a thing we think is very rare. We think of quarantine with things like tuberculosis or Ebola, and these high profile but rare conditions. The fact that there's thousands and thousands of people who need quarantine, it can lead to what, you know, people have talked about as quarantine or pandemic fatigue, but it still remains very, very important. And if someone has been exposed because you know that you've been in close contact with a person with COVID-19 or you've been contacted by local public
health. We have to pause there. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Wisconsin's chief medical officer and state epidemiologist for communicable diseases. COVID is tearing through Wisconsin. The dashboards tell us the upsurge in our state has escalated more rapidly than those in other states. On Friday, the New York Times called us the state that has unraveled the fastest. Let's bring in David now in Ashland with the situation, what he sees. David, hi, go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Westergaard. When this pandemic first got going here in Wisconsin, we were told that we should stay at home and so forth. And I know a lot of areas they were actually getting ready with IDs for essential workers and so forth, but all these exceptions were made that it was okay to go to Walmart and it was okay to go to the liquor store. And why couldn't people be told a week ahead of time that, okay, now you have to go out and buy a couple rolls of toilet paper, get a little bit of food in the fridge, and actually make everyone stay at home for 2 weeks other than emergency personnel and keep that down to emergency calls only.
So David is asking, why is it so difficult to shelter in place for people, Dr. Westergaard?
Well, sheltering in place is difficult for everybody, as we've learned. I think the idea that sheltering in place or having a shutdown in a planned or more coordinated fashion to say we all need to agree that we can do this, let's do the things that make it easier for us, let's support each other in with groceries and, you know, other sources of support to make people able to stay at home better. I think, you know, David's point is if we could plan this out and make this types of support available to people, we might be able to do this more successfully. The challenge has been we haven't had consensus both among leaders or among the general population that this is urgently needed. It's becoming more and more urgently needed. And I think a public, you know, statewide conversation about how we do this effectively and how we acknowledge the ways in which it's hard for people and support them is going to be really important. So I appreciate the comment.
David, thank you. Mary now in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Mary. What is your question?
My question is about how the field hospital actually operates. In looking at the pictures of it, it looks like one big gym with row after row of cots. And my question is how, if I were a patient, I might not choose to go there either because I'm wondering about the privacy and how people go to the bathroom and be bathed and dressed and cared for it with looks like there's no privacy.
Mary, thanks. Dr. Westergaard, what is the situation at the field hospital and how it's administered?
Well, the field hospital was designed in collaboration with the Army Corps of Engineers and some local healthcare executives with the goal of providing the standard of care that is just as high as what we receive in hospitals. Every patient gets to make the decision whether they feel comfortable getting care in that environment. And people don't have to go there if they don't want to. But the intention and the design, and I believe the experience, has been it is acceptable, high-quality care that you would get in any hospital in Wisconsin.
Who is staffing the field hospital?
It's being staffed by nurses and physicians through a contractor. So we're not taking healthcare providers away from their posts in other health systems. So the state has hired providers specifically to work there. And their idea is that it adds capacity rather than shifts capacity from one system to another.
We've heard that there is such a scarcity of agency temp nurses, temp healthcare workers, temp respiratory therapists, that there aren't enough of them for hospitals in Wisconsin to rely on, and that this is a totally different situation than what we saw in New York City in the spring. Can you elaborate on the staffing situation?
It's true, Kate. This is a really grave situation. We can build more hospital beds and we can provide, we've acquired more ventilators for severe illness, but we can't make new healthcare providers. We just can't. And there's going to be a situation if we continue on the trajectory that we're on where there's not going to be enough people, resources to care for everyone who needs it. The only way we can prevent that is to stop transmission. So it's not a problem, sadly, that the healthcare system can solve. It's only a problem that the entire community, the entire state can solve because we are at risk for running out of resources.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer, State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases. He's briefing us on the state's condition in this COVID health crisis. Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha this morning. Hi, Mary Kay. What is your question or what would you like to add?
Good morning. I have three things I'd like to say we can make improvements on. The first one is people at work are already getting tested and you need to hire more people during a pandemic. So we need more food inspectors. Okay. The second one is you go into restaurants, the customers are not keeping their masks on, and the servers don't have no gloves when serving drinks. Okay. The third one is our box stores are not mandating masks, and a lot of people are coming from Illinois. I live in Kenosha. They come from Illinois, don't wear masks, and they go shopping, and nobody in any of these stores are keeping their distance. So if we can improve on these three things, we'd be a lot better.
Dr. Westergaard, what would you say there?
Getting at what I call combination prevention. You know, we don't have any one thing that's going to stop this epidemic. We have to take all of the strategies that we've talked about, distancing, masking, and unfortunately foregoing some of the activities that give our life a lot of meaning, like dining out and gathering. And we have to do all those things for a period of time in order for us to get through this. And we have to do all of them together, and we have to get everyone to participate.
In the situation contact tracers are in, are there enough right now? And what is that situation like following up with positive cases?
The answer is no. We don't have nearly enough contact tracers. And it's unlikely that given the very high case numbers that we ever could. So the contact tracing, the program, which is initially designed to identify all the clusters and outbreaks and stop them. You know, we're not able to do that right now, but contact tracing can still directly save people's lives because transmission is occurring among people who don't know they're infected and don't know they're exposed. We can prevent new exposures by telling people that they were exposed to someone and need to quarantine. So we have to figure out how and when to do that in an efficient way to save the lives and prevent infections among the most vulnerable. That's our current challenge. We can't call everybody. We need to figure out who's at the highest risk and make sure that they know how to stay safe. And that's a work in progress. As you know, we're trying to figure out better strategies to triage, to get information that identifies who's at highest risk and use the resources we have to help keep those people safe.
Health departments are developing plans now to distribute vaccinations to residents. How will this rollout work? What is the plan?
Yes, that's one area where there's been good news. Another press release this morning that the second vaccine shows high levels of efficacy in the preliminary analysis of the data.
Moderna.
So we in Wisconsin all of our state health department and our health departments are planning for when these vaccines become available, how do we get them out to people. So we have numerous existing channels through which we get vaccine for all infections out to people. And we're trying to make sure that all of those channels are prepared for these specific types of vaccines and have the capacity to serve the communities. And so our state health department immunization program is taking the lead on that regard to make sure we have all the pieces in place. And we're in close collaboration with the CDC, which is coordinating the federal logistics and the local health departments. So this is, this is really one of the exciting possibilities, a great deal of work, but the plan is under development and I feel really good about it.
Dr. Westergaard, thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Nice talking with you.
To Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Just ahead, we talk with a nutritionist about eating to improve our well-being. What are anti-inflammatory foods and how can they protect our heart? Are you on a diet or going on one? What do you want to know about that diet? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.